Wives and Daughters by Elizabeth Gaskell, dramatized in 9 episodes by Barry Campbell, with Catherine Hurlbut, Angela Pleasance, Tom Wilkinson, Robert Lang, and Thelma Whiteley. Part 2, A Crisis.
Due to the somewhat unpleasant fact that one of his pupils had conceived a passion for his daughter, Mr. Gibson, the Hollingford doctor, had found it necessary to arrange that the girl should spend some time visiting his friend and patient, Mrs. Hamley, at Hamley Hall. There, young Molly Gibson enjoyed some weeks of happiness and summer tranquility. Until one Thursday, when the quiet country household was stirred through all its fibres with the return of Roger Hamley, the younger of Squire Hamley's 2 sons.
Mary, whatever are you doing here at this time?
Oh, I'm sorry not to have finished before this, Miss Molly, but I've been that busy scouring Mr. Rogers' rooms. Not but what they were as clean as could be beforehand. But Mistress would always have the young gentlemen's rooms cleaned afresh before they came home. If it had been Miss Osborne coming, the old house would have had to be done. But to be sure, he is the eldest, so that's only right and proper. There, that's done. I'll go now, Miss.
Sorry, Miss.
Such an upheaval. Perhaps it is as well that Mr. Osborne isn't coming home after all.
I'm sorry that you even came in the first place. To be wasting such time. Terry, I won't carry you. I won't.
Oh, why, Mrs. Hamley, whatever can be the matter?
It's Osborne. Roger has been telling us about him.
What about him?
Well, we had a letter. He said that he'd not done as well as he'd hoped in his exams. Poor fellow. He said that he had passed, but was only low down, not where he'd expected and had led us to expect. The Squire has been asking Roger all about it. And Roger has been telling him, and it has made him so angry.
I don't think Mr. Roger should have told. He had no need to begin so soon after his arrival about his brother's failure. Why, he hasn't been in the house an hour.
Oh, hush, hush, my dear. You don't understand. Roger is so good. The Squire would begin and ask questions as soon as ever Roger arrived. And all he said to me, at any rate, was that Osborne was nervous, and that if only he could have gone in for the Chancellor's medals, he would have carried all before him. But Roger said that after failing like this, he's not very likely to get a fellowship, which the Squire had placed his hopes on. Osborne himself seems so sure of it that the Squire can't understand it and is seriously angry and growing more so the more he talks about it.
I'm very sorry for Mr. Osborne. Indeed, I am.
Oh, you are a blessing to mother's child. You give one such pleasant sympathy, both in one's gladness and in one's sorrow and in one's disappointment. But now, you had better go and dress for dinner. Thank goodness your being forth will keep us off that sore subject. There are times when a stranger in the house is a wonderful help.
Molly thought over all she had heard as she was dressing and putting on her terrible, over-smart plaid gown in honour of the new arrival. Her unconscious fealty to Osborne was not in the least shaken by his having come to grief at Cambridge. Only she was indignant against Roger for having brought the bad news, and she went into the dining room with anything but a welcome in her heart.
Now, lucky fella, he's gone on a walking tour of the Dolomites.
How nice. He is the sort of person that I shall never get on with.
If you enjoy the countryside, Miss Gibson, there are some truly excellent walks near here, and a great many fascinating natural phenomena to be studied and enjoyed.
Oh, really? How can he be so unfeeling, so talkative?
There is the mere, of course, and sometimes one can even see heron there.
I have seen the heron, thank you. How can he go on so cheerfully while his poor mother is on the verge of tears?
I sometimes go dredging in the mere, and it is quite
Robinson, Squire, bring up a bottle of the burgundy with the yellow seal.
If you please, sir, there are not above 6 bottles of that seal left, and it's Mr. Osborne's favourite wine. Sir,
bring a bottle of the burgundy with a yellow seal, as I said.
Yes, Squire.
Mr. Osborne's likes and dislikes have hitherto been rather too much considered in this house, it seems to me.
Oh, when will Papa let me go home?
During Molly's absence at Hamley Hall, Mr. Gibson was drifting into matrimony. He was partly aware of whither he was going, and partly it was like the soft, floating movement of a dream. It happened in this manner. Lady Cumnor, having married her two eldest daughters, found her labours as a chaperone to Lady Harriet, the youngest, considerably lightened by cooperation, and at length she had leisure to be an invalid. She was, however, too energetic to allow herself this indulgence constantly. Only she permitted herself to break down occasionally, after a long course of dinners, late hours and London atmosphere. This particular summer, she had broken down earlier than usual, and longed for the repose of the country. Yet she did not quite like being without a companion in the 3 weeks that might intervene before her family joined her.
Thursday the 19th. Harriet.
Yes, Mama?
I said Thursday the 19th. That is the day that the annual festivity to the school visitors is due to take place.
Oh, dear. Is it really?
Harriet, what do you say to coming down to the Towers on the 18th? You could stay in the country till Monday and have a few days' rest and good air. You would return a great deal fresher to the remainder of your gaieties.
Oh, Mama, I cannot go. There's the water party up to Maidenhead on the 20th. I should be so sorry to miss it. Besides, I should do no good. I can't make provincial small talk. I'm not up in the local politics of Hollingford.
Very well, my dear. I had forgotten the Maidenhead water party, or I would not have asked you.
Mama, why shouldn't you have Claire Kirkpatrick to stay with you? You like her? And she is just the person to save you the trouble of hospitality to the Hollingford people. And we should all be so much more comfortable if we knew you had her with you.
Yes, Claire would do very well, Mary. Oh, but isn't it her school time or something? We must not interfere with her school as to injure her, for I'm afraid she is not doing too well as it is. And she has been so very unlucky ever since she left us. First her husband died, and then she lost Lady Davis' situation, and then Mrs. Maud's, and now Mr. Preston has told your father it was all she could do to pay her way to Ashcombe, though Lord Cumnor lets her have the house rent-free.
I can't think how it is. She's not very wise, certainly, but she's so useful and agreeable and has such pleasant manners. I should have thought that anyone who wasn't particular about education would have been charmed to keep her as a governess.
What do you mean by not being particular about education? Most people who keep governesses for their children are supposed to be particular.
Well, they think themselves so, I've no doubt. And I call you particular, Mary, but I don't think Mama was, though she thought herself so, I'm sure.
I can't think what you mean, Harriet.
Oh, dear Mama, you did everything you could think of for us. You gave us the best masters in every department and Claire to dragonize us and keep us up to our preparation for them. But then you know, or rather you didn't know, some of the masters admired our very pretty governess, and there was a kind of respectable, veiled flirtation going on, which never came to anything, to be sure. And then you were so often overwhelmed with your business as a great lady, fashionable and benevolent and all that sort of thing, that you used to call Claire away from us at the most critical times of our lessons to write your notes or add up your accounts. And the consequence is that I'm about the most ill-informed girl in London.
Do you think what Harriet says is true, Mary?
There's so little with Claire in the schoolroom. I used to read French with her, and she had a beautiful accent, I remember. The only thing that makes me uneasy is the way in which she seems to send her daughter away from her so much. We never can persuade her to bring Cynthia with her when she comes to see us.
Now, I call that ill-natured. Here's a poor dear woman
trying
to earn
her living. We're not discussing Claire and her affairs, but trying to plan for Mama's comfort. I don't see that she can do better than ask Mrs. Kirkpatrick to come to Cumnor Towers. As soon as the holidays begin, I mean.
Here's her last letter. Oh, I know it's here somewhere. Ah, yes. Here it is. The vacation begins on the 11th, according to the usual custom of schools in Ashcombe, and I must then try and obtain some change of air and scene in order to fit myself for the resumption of my duties on the 10th of August. You see, girls, she would be at liberty if she has not made any other arrangements for spending her holidays.
I will write to her at once, Mama.
Do ask the poor little daughter to come with her mother to the Towers. Why, she must be 17 or more.
I was not 10 when Claire married, and I'm nearly 29.
Don't speak of it, Harriet. At any rate, you are but 28 now, and you look a good deal younger. There is no need to be always bringing up your age on every possible occasion.
There was need of it now, though. I wanted to make out how old Cynthia Kirkpatrick was. I think she can't be far from 18.
She's at school at Boulogne, I know, and so I don't think she can be as old as that. Claire says something about it in this letter. I hear. Under these circumstances, the ill success of her school, I cannot think myself justified in allowing myself the pleasure of having darling Cynthia at home for the holidays, especially as the period when the vacations in French schools commences differs from that common in England. So, you see, Claire would be quite at liberty to come to me, and I dare say it would be a very nice change for her.
So the plan, in its present shape, was told to Lord Cumnor, who highly approved of it, as he always did of every project of his wife's. Lady Cumnor's character was perhaps a little too ponderous for him in reality, but he was always full of admiration for all her words and deeds, and used to boast of her wisdom, her benevolence, her power and dignity in her absence, as if by this means he could buttress up his own more feeble nature.
Ah, very good. Very good indeed. Claire to join you at the Towers? Capital. I couldn't have planned it better myself. Now I shall go down with you on Wednesday, in time for the jollification on Thursday. I always enjoy that day. And perhaps I may ride over to Ashcombe and see Preston. Brown Bess can do it in a day. 18 miles, to be sure. Ah, but there's back again to the Towers. Yeah, how much is twice 18? 30?
36.
So it is. You're always right, my dear. Preston's a clever, sharp fellow.
I don't like him.
He takes looking after, but he's a sharp fellow. He's such a good-looking man, too. I wonder you don't like him.
I never think whether a land agent is handsome or not. They don't belong to the class of people whose appearance I notice.
To be sure not. But he is a handsome fellow. And what should make you like him is the interest he takes in Mrs. Kirkpatrick and her prospects.
Claire?
And he's constantly suggesting something that can be done to her house. And I know he sends her fruit, and flowers, and game.
How old is he?
Oh, about 27, I think. Mm. Ah, I see what's in your ladyship's head. No, no, no. He's too young for that. You must look out for some middle-aged man if you want to get poor Claire remarried. Preston won't do.
I'm not a matchmaker, as you might know. I never did it for my own daughters. I'm not likely to do it for Claire.
Well, you might do a worse thing. I'm beginning to think she'll never get on as a schoolmistress, though why she shouldn't, I'm sure I don't know. She's an uncommonly pretty woman for her age. Ah, yes. I say, my lady, what do you think of Gibson, the doctor? He would be just the right age, widower, lives near the Towers and all.
I told you just now I was no matchmaker, my lord. Now, concerning the journey, I suppose we'd better go by the old road. The people at those inns know us.
Mrs. Kirkpatrick, Claire, was only too happy to accept Lady Cumnor's invitation. It was what she'd been hoping for, but hardly dared to expect. So she gladly prepared to join her ladyship at Cumnor Towers. Her wardrobe did not require much arrangement. If it had done, the poor lady would not have had much money to appropriate to the purpose. She was very pretty and graceful, and that goes a great way towards carrying off shabby clothes. Her beautiful hair was of that rich auburn that hardly ever turns grey. Her eyes were soft, large, and china blue in colour. Her figure was a little fuller than it used to be, but altogether she looked much younger than her age, which was not far short of 40.
Cumnor Towers. Oh, to be staying with Lady Cumnor at Cumnor Towers again. Oh, to leave this little house with its shabby and battered furniture, with its gloomy lookout and its squalid surroundings, and to go bowling through the Towers Park in a luxurious carriage. Why, at the Towers, money is like the air they breathe. No one even asks or knows how much the washing costs or what price of ribbon is a yard. Ah, it would be different if they had to earn every penny as I have. I wonder if I am to go on all my life toiling and moiling for money. It's not natural. Marriage is the natural thing. Then the husband has all that kind of dirty work to do, and his wife sits in the drawing room like a lady. I did, when poor Kirkpatrick was alive. Hey-ho! It's a sad thing to be a widow. Come the Towers. Oh, and the dinners!
A disturbance to the pleasant, even course of the summer days Claire was to spend at Cumnor Towers came in the indisposition of Lady Cumnor. Lord Cumnor was almost certain, though he could give no reason for his belief, that his wife was not well. Yet he was too much afraid of her to send for Mr. Gibson without her permission. He did, however, discuss the matter with Claire shortly before he departed for London.
It's such a comfort to leave my lady to you, Claire. Only don't you be deluded by her ways. She'll not show she's ill till she can't help it. If I were you, I'd send and ask Gibson to call. You might make any kind of pretense. I say, why not get him to come and see you? And he might be looking at my lady while he was talking to you, and see if he thinks her really ill, and let me know what he says about her.
Certainly, Lord Cumnor.
That's the way. Get him to come and see you. Capital.
But Claire was just a greater coward about doing anything for Lady Cumnor which she had not expressly ordered as Lord Cumnor himself, and had no intention of incurring Lady Cumnor's displeasure. But a day or two after this conversation took place, Lady Cumnor startled Mrs. Kirkpatrick by saying suddenly,
Claire, I wish you'd write a note to Mr. Gibson saying I should like to see him this afternoon. I thought he would have called of himself before now. He ought to have done so to pay his respects.
Yes, Lady Cumnor.
But Mr. Gibson had been far too busy in his profession to have time for mere visits of ceremony. The district of which he may be said to have had medical charge was full of a bad kind of low fever, which took up all his time and thought, and often made him very thankful that Molly was out of the way in the quiet shades of Hamley Hall. His domestic rows had not healed over in the least. The final straw had been an impromptu visit of Lord Cumnor's eldest son, Lord Hollingford, in search of scientific conversation and some lunch. Mr. Gibson's cook was still sulking at the dismissal of Bathia, and though at length the meal was served, Mr. Gibson, the poor host, saw the want of nicety, almost the want of cleanliness, in all its accompaniments.
You see, my lord, a man like me, a widower with a daughter, who cannot always be at home, has not a regulated household which would enable me to command the small portions of time I can spend here.
You're true, true. Yet a man like you ought to be free from any thought of household cares. You ought to have somebody. How old is Miss Gibson?
17. Well, it's a very awkward age for a motherless girl.
Yes, very. I have only boys, but it must be very awkward with a girl. Excuse me, Gibson, we're talking like friends. Have you never thought of marrying again? Wouldn't be like a first marriage, of course, but if you found a sensible, agreeable woman of 30 or so, I really think you couldn't do better than to take her to manage your home. And besides, she would be able to give your daughter that kind of tender supervision, which I fancy all girls of that age require. A delicate subject, but you'll excuse my having spoken frankly.
Oh, well, it's a very sound advice, my lord, very sound, but I fear it's a case of first catch your hare.
Mm-hmm.
Where is there a suitable, sensible and agreeable woman of 30 or so? Miss Browning? Miss Phoebe? Miss Goodenough? Alas, I fear not. Among my patients, there are two distinctly marked classes. Farmers whose children are, for the most part, unrefined and uneducated, and squires whose daughters would indeed think the world was coming to a pretty pass if they were to marry a country surgeon.
Yeah, I must take your point, Gibson. Devilish difficult.
But the first day on which Mr. Gibson paid his visit to Lady Cumnor, he began to think it possible that Mrs. Kirkpatrick was his heir. He rode away from the Towers with slack rein, thinking over what he knew of her.
Mrs. Kirkpatrick. She's always been a great favourite with the people at the Towers, and that speaks well of her. A widow who's been a governess and is now a schoolma'am at Ashcombe. A young widow at that. Well, comparatively speaking, since she's a daughter who must be about Molly's age. And she behaved most kindly to poor Molly when she got left behind at the Towers that time. Poor little Molly. Claire Kirkpatrick. Well, well, I wonder. It would perhaps be no bad thing. Of course, she's very little, if any, property. Still, all in all, no bad thing at all.
Lady Cumnor was out of health. Reports were duly sent up to my lord, but he and his daughters were strictly forbidden to come down. Lady Cumnor wished to be weak and languid and uncertain both in body and mind without the family observation. Sometimes she herself wrote the daily bulletins. At other times she bade Claire do it. Any answers she received from her daughters she used to read herself. But anybody might read my lord's letters.
Hardly expect the fellow to say so. And that from Hodgkinson, the man with barely 2 halfpennies to rub together. How a... Oh.
Well, read on. What are you stopping for? There is no bad news, is there? About Agnes? Give me the letter. Where were we now? Oh, I see. How are Claire and Gibson getting on? You despised my advice to help on that affair, but I really think a little matchmaking would be a very pleasant amusement now that you are shut up in the house. And I cannot conceive any marriage more suitable. It was awkward for you to come upon that, Claire. I don't wonder you stopped short. You gave me a terrible fright, though.
Lord Cumnor is so fond of joking.
Yes, indeed. Still, all the same, it was awkward for you to come upon it.
The next morning, when the house was cleared of them, and none but my sister and myself left in the kitchen with Sir Condy, one opens the door and walks in. And who should it be but Judy McQuirk herself? What is it? Her ladyship is resting.
Ah, very good. I wonder if I could speak to you for a minute or two in the library.
Yes, of course, Mr. Gibson. Is he going to offer? Is he?
And make sure that she takes the dose twice a day.
Yes, Mr. Gibson.
It's very stormy weather.
Yes, very. My daughter writes me word that for 2 days last week the packet could not sail from Boulogne.
Oh, Miss Kirkpatrick is at Boulogne, is she?
Yes, poor girl. She is at school there. But, Mr. Gibson, you must not call her Miss Kirkpatrick. Cynthia remembers you with so much affection, I may say. She was your little patient when she had the measles here 4 years ago, you know. Pray, call her Cynthia. Oh.
Cynthia seems to me such an out-of-the-way name, only fit for poetry, not for daily use.
Oh, it is my name. I was christened Hyacinth, and her poor father would have her called after me. I am sorry you do not like it.
Oh, but I...
Hyacinth Clare. Once upon a time I was quite proud of my pretty name, and other people thought it pretty too.
I have no
Perhaps
doubt...
Perhaps I did wrong in yielding to his wish to have her called by such a romantic name. It may excite prejudice against her in some people. And poor child, she will have enough to struggle with. A young daughter is a great charge, Mr. Gibson, especially when there is only one parent to look after her.
You're quite right, though I should have thought that a girl who is so fortunate as to have a mother could not feel the loss of her father so acutely as one who is motherless must suffer from her deprivation.
Ah, you are thinking of your own daughter. It was careless of me to say what I did. Dear child, how well I remember her sweet little face as she lay sleeping on my bed. You remember? That day long ago when she was left behind.
I do indeed, though it
yes,
must be
now. Yes, I suppose she is near grown up now. Why, she must be near my Cynthia's age. How I should like to see her.
I hope you will. I should like you to see her. I should like you to love my poor little Molly, to love her as your own, to, Could you love her as your daughter?
Why?
Will you try? Will you give me the right of introducing you to her as her future mother, as my wife?
Oh, Mr. Gibson. Oh.
Oh, my dear. My dearest.
Call me Hyacinth. Your own Hyacinth. I can't bear Claire. And it does so remind me of being a governor. And those days are all past.
We ought to tell Lady Cumnor, I suppose.
Oh, yes, you'll tell her, won't you? I always like other people to tell her things, and then I can see how she takes them.
Certainly, I'll do whatever you wish. Although I ought to tell Molly first. She has the right to know. I do hope you and she will love each other dearly.
Oh, yes, I'm sure we shall.
Her ladyship is awake and wishes you to join her.
Oh, thank you. We'll come at once.
I'm glad you've not gone, Mr. Gibson. I wanted to tell you... Why, what's the matter with you two? What have you been saying to Claire? I'm sure something has happened.
My lady,
Well, out with it.
I have been asking Mrs. Kirkpatrick to be my wife and to be a mother to my child, and she has consented.
I don't see any objection. I dare say you'll be very happy. Oh, I'm glad of it. Here, shake hands with me, both of you. It does not seem to me that any exertion has been required on my part.
Oh, Lady
Cuthbert,
did she not tell you? Then I must. It's too good a joke to be lost, especially as everything has ended so well. When Lord Cumnor's letter came this morning, this very morning, I gave it to Claire to read aloud to me, and I saw she suddenly came to a full stop where no full stop could be, and I thought it was something about Agnes, so I took the letter and read. Stay, I'll read the sentence to you. Where's that letter, Claire?
Lady
Cumnor... Oh, don't trouble yourself. Here it is. How are Claire and Gibson getting on? You despised my advice to help on that little affair, but I really think a little matchmaking would be a very pleasant amusement now that you are shut up in the house, and I cannot conceive any marriage more suitable. You see, you have my lord's full approbation. Oh, but I must write and tell him you have managed your own affairs without any interference of mine. Now... We'll just have a little medical talk, Mr. Gibson, and then you and Claire shall finish your tete-a-tete.
Oh, but Lady Cumnor...
Come, no nonsense. I always made my girls go and have a tete-a-tete with the men who were to be their husbands, whether they would or no. There's a great deal to be talked over before every marriage, and you two are certainly old enough to be above affectation.
I hope...
Well, now, my...
It was cruel of...
It's of little matter now, Hyacinth. Oh, stay there, my dear.
I cannot tell what poor Kirkpatrick would say if he knew what I have done.
Mr. Kirkpatrick?
Yes, he did so dislike the notion of second marriages, poor fellow.
Well, let us hope that he doesn't know then, or that if he does, he's wiser. I mean, that he sees now how second marriages may be most desirable and expedient in some cases.
Yes. Let us hope so.
Altogether, this second tete-a-tete done to command was not so satisfactory as the first, and Mr. Gibson was quite alive to the necessity of proceeding on his round to see his patients before very much time had elapsed.
We shall shake down into uniformity before long, I've no doubt. It's hardly to be expected that our thoughts should run in the same groove all at once, nor should I like it. It would be very flat and stagnant to have only an echo of one's opinions from one's wife. Ah, well. Now I must tell Molly about it. Dear little woman, I wonder how she'll take it. After all, it's done in a great measure for her good. Perhaps... Well, it's too late to go down by Hamley now. I'd better go in the morning.
Molly. Molly, my dear. Molly.
Oh, Papa. Oh, dear, dear Papa. What made you come while I was asleep? Come and sit by me, do. Oh, I was up so early. It's so charming to be here in the fresh air.
It is indeed, Molly.
Have you heard from Miss Eyre, Papa? How are they all? Oh, and this fever that is about. Do you know, Papa? I don't think you are looking well. You want me at home to take care of you. Oh, Papa, how soon may I come
home? Don't I look well? That must be all your fancy, Goosey. I feel uncommonly well, and I ought to look well, for I've a piece of news for you, little woman. Can you guess it?
Well, how should I?
Why, you see, my love, that you're in a very awkward position, a girl growing up in such a family as mine, with the pupils and young men. And I'm obliged to be away so much.
But there is Miss Eyre. Dear Miss Eyre, I want nothing but her and you.
Still, there are times... Like the present, when Miss Eyre cannot be with you. I've been in great perplexity for some time, but at last I've taken a step which I hope will make us both happier.
You're going to be married again?
Yes, to Mrs. Kirkpatrick. You remember her? They call her Claire at the Towers. You recollect how kind she was to you on school visitors' day. She's a very suitable age for me. I don't know how old she is exactly, but she must be nearly 40. I shouldn't have wished to marry anyone younger. She's highly respected by Lord and Lady Cumnor and their family, which is, of itself, a character. She's a very pleasant and agreeable, polished manner. Of course, from the circle she's been thrown into, so we must brush up our manners now. She's been accustomed to housekeeping, economical housekeeping, too. For of late years, she's had a school at Ashcombe. And last, but not least, she has a daughter, about your age, Molly, who of course, will come and live with us and be a nice companion, a sister for you.
So I was sent out of the house that all this might be quietly arranged in my absence. Oh, Papa, how could you? I don't know what to say about this hateful, this detestable... Oh, no, Papa, come back. I'm not myself.
I think it's better for both of us for me to go away now. We may say things difficult to forget. We're both much agitated. By tomorrow we shall be more composed. You'll have thought it over and see that the principle, the great motive, I mean, was for your good. You may tell Mrs. Hamley. I meant to have told her myself. I'll come again tomorrow. Goodbye, Molly.
Oh, Papa! Papa, come back! I didn't mean... Oh, Papa!
Miss Gibson.
Oh. Mr. Hamley, I did not hear your approach. Is it lunchtime so soon?
I don't know. I was going home to lunch when... But you must let me say it. I couldn't go on when I saw your distress. Has anything happened? Anything in which I can help, I mean. For, of course, I have no right to make the inquiry if it is any private sorrow.
Papa is to be married again.
You are sorry for it?
Yes.
It seems as if there might be cases where, setting the question of love entirely on one side... It must be almost a duty to find someone to be a substitute for the mother. I can believe that this step may be greatly for your father's happiness. It may relieve him from many cares and may give him a pleasant companion.
He had me. You don't know what we were to each other. Well, at least what he was to me.
Still, he must have thought it for the best, or he wouldn't have done it. He may have thought it for the best for your sake, even more than for his own.
That's what he tried to convince me of.
I want to tell you of a girl I know, Alice. Her mother died when she was 16. And some years later, her father married again. A woman not many years older than Alice herself. Well, they are just the happiest set of people I know. You wouldn't have thought it likely, though, would you?
How was it?
Alice thought of her father's happiness before she thought of her own.
If it were for Papa's happiness...
He must believe that it is. Whatever you fancy, give him a chance. He cannot have much comfort, I should think, if he sees you fretting or pining. You who have been so much to him, as you say. The lady herself, too. If Alice's stepmother had been a selfish woman and had always been clutching after the gratification of her own wishes... But she was not. And your father's future wife may be another of the same kind, though such people are rare.
I don't think she is, though. I remember meeting her once.
It is right to hope for the best about everyone. And not to expect the worst. This sounds like a truism, but it has comforted me before now, and someday you'll find it useful. One has always to try to think more of others than of oneself, and it is best not to prejudge people on the bad side. I am sorry. My sermons aren't long, are they? Have they given you an appetite for lunch? Sermons always make me hungry, I know.
Well,
Here, let me assist you.
Thank you.
Where have you been, Roger? I've been waiting luncheon.
I am sorry, Mother.
Where's Molly? Miss Gibson, I mean.
I've been out dredging, and on my return, I found Miss Gibson on the terrace walk, crying as if her heart would break. Her father is going to be married again.
Married again? You don't say so.
Yes, he is. And she takes it very hardly. Mother, I think if you could send someone to her with a glass of wine or something of that sort...
But whom is Mr. Gibson going to marry?
Well, I don't know.
I didn't ask, and she didn't tell me.
Oh, that's so like a man. Why, half the character of the affair lies in the question of who it is that Mr. Gibson's going to marry.
I dare say I ought to have asked, but somehow I'm not a good one on such occasions. I couldn't think of what to say.
What did you say?
Well, I gave her the best advice in my power.
Advice? You ought to have comforted her. Poor Molly.
Well, I think that if advice is good, it is the best comfort.
Well, that depends on what you mean by advice.
I'm very sorry to have kept you waiting, Mrs. Hamley.
Molly, my dear.
Miss Gibson, take my seat.
Molly, I hear that your father is going to be married. My dear, may I ask whom it is to?
A Mrs. Kirkpatrick. I think she was a governess a long time ago at the Countess of Cumnor's. She stays with them a great deal, and they call her Claire. And I believe they are very fond of her.
I think I've heard of her. Oh, then she's not very young. That's as it should be. A widow, too. Has she any family?
One girl, I believe. But I know so little about her.
Oh, never mind, my dear. That will all come in good time. Why, Roger, where are you going?
To fetch my dredging net. I've left it on the terrace. It's full of things I don't want to lose.
Oh, very well. But don't be too long away. We can't wait luncheon forever.
Yes, Mother.
Oh, he was so good to me. I mean to try and remember all he said.
I am glad to hear it. Very glad. From what he told me, I was afraid he'd been giving you a little lecture. He has a good heart. But he isn't so tender in his manner as Osborne.
Oh, it did me good. It made me feel how badly... Oh, Mrs. Hamley, I did behave so badly to Papa this morning.
There, my dear. You understand, I'm certain. You must see him tomorrow and tell him how truly sorry you are.
Well, now, Molly.
Oh, Papa, I'm so truly, truly sorry that I...
There, that'll do. I know all you want to say. I know my little Molly, my silly little goosey, better than she knows herself.
Oh, Papa, but...
No buts, no tears. I've brought you an invitation.
An invitation?
Aye, from Lady Cumnor. She wants you to go and spend next Thursday at the Towers.
Do you wish me to go?
I wish you and Hyacinth to become better acquainted, to learn to love each other.
Hyacinth?
Yes. Hyacinth. It's the silliest name I've ever heard of, but it's hers, and I must call her by it. I can't bear Claire, and Mrs. Kirkpatrick is formal and nonsensical, too, as she'll change her name so soon.
When, Papa?
Not till after Michaelmas. And the worst is, she's gone and perpetuated her own affected name by having her daughter called after her. Cynthia. Cynthia. One thinks of the moon and the man in the moon with his bundle of faggots. I'm thankful you're plain Molly, child.
How old is she? Cynthia, I mean.
Aye, and get accustomed to the name. Well, I should think Cynthia Kirkpatrick is about as old as you are. She's at school in France just now, picking up airs and graces. She's to come home for the wedding, so you'll be able to get acquainted with her then. Though I think she's to go back again for another half year or so. Cynthia, indeed.
Papa. Mr. Gibson believed that Cynthia Kirkpatrick was to return to England to be present at her mother's wedding. But Mrs. Kirkpatrick had no such intentions. She was not what is commonly called a woman of determination, but somehow what she disliked, she avoided, and what she liked, she tried to do or to have. She had felt how disagreeable it would be to have her young daughter flashing out her beauty by the side of the faded bride, her mother. Mrs. Kirkpatrick had gone to bed that first night of her engagement to Mr. Gibson, fully anticipating a speedy marriage. So, it was rather like a douche of cold water on her plans when, the next morning, Lady Cumnor began to decide upon the arrangement and duties of the two middle-aged lovers.
Of course you can't give up your school all at once, Claire. The wedding can't be before Christmas, but that will do very well. We shall all be down at the Towers, and it will be a nice amusement for the children to go over to Ashcombe and see you married.
I don't believe Mr. Gibson will like waiting so long. Men are so impatient under these circumstances.
Oh, nonsense. Lord Cumnor has recommended you to his tenants at Ashcombe, and I'm sure he wouldn't like them to be put to any inconvenience. Mr. Gibson will see that in a moment. He's a man of sense, or else he wouldn't be our family doctor. Now, what are you going to do about your little girl? Have you fixed yet?
No. Yesterday there seemed so little time, and when one is agitated, it is so difficult to think. Cynthia is nearly 18, old enough to be out as a governess, if he wishes it. But I don't think he will. He is so generous and kind.
Well, I must give you time to settle some of your affairs today. Don't waste it in sentiment. You're too old for that. Come to a clear understanding with each other. It will be for your happiness in the long run.
Yes, Lady Governor. I am to meet dear Mr. Gibson in the library this afternoon. Of course.
But mind now. Come to a clear understanding.
I can hardly tell you what a comfort and relief it'll be to me, Hyacinth, when you're once my wife, the mistress of my home, and poor little Molly's mother and protector. But I wouldn't interfere with your previous engagements for the world. It wouldn't be right. Why, I wouldn't have you give up your school a week sooner than is right, just for my sake.
Thank you, my own love. How good you are. So many men would only think of their own wishes and interests. I am sure the parents of my dear pupils will admire you, will be quite surprised at your consideration for their interests.
Oh, don't tell them, then. I hate being admired. Why shouldn't you say it's your wish to keep on your school till they've had time to look out for another?
Because it isn't. I long to be making you happy. I want to make your home a place of rest and comfort to you. And I do so wish to cherish your sweet Molly. I can't take virtue to myself which doesn't belong to me. If I have to speak for myself, I shall say, good people, find a school for your daughters by Michaelmas, for after that time I must go and make the happiness of others. Though I couldn't consent to any time before Michaelmas, that wouldn't be fair or right. And I am sure you wouldn't urge me. You are too good.
Well, if you think that they will consider we have acted uprightly by them, let it be Michaelmas with all my heart. What does Lady Cumnor say?
Oh, I told her I was afraid you wouldn't like waiting because of your difficulties with your servants and because of Molly. It would be so desirable to enter on the new relationship with her as soon as possible.
To be sure, so it would. Poor child, I'm afraid the intelligence of my engagement has rather startled her.
Cynthia will feel it deeply, too.
We shall have her over to the wedding. She and Molly shall be bridesmaids.
Oh, how thoughtful of you, my dear.
It is a question whether Mrs. Kirkpatrick or Molly wished the most for the day to be over which they were to spend together at the Towers. Mrs. Kirkpatrick was rather weary of girls as a class. All the trials of her life were connected with girls in some way. Mrs. Kirkpatrick accepted Mr. Gibson principally because she was tired of the struggle of earning her own livelihood. But she liked him, personally. Nay, she even loved him in her torpid way, and she really intended to be as kind as she could to her new stepdaughter.
What eyes! So like your dear father's. How we shall love each other, shan't we, darling, for his sake?
I'll try, but...
And you've got the same beautiful hair.
Papa's hair is growing grey.
Is it? I never see it. I never shall see it. He will always be to me the handsomest of men.
Still, he will grow old, and his hair will grow grey. I think he will be just as handsome, but it won't be as a young man.
Ah, that's just it. He will always be handsome. Some people always are. And he is so fond of you, my dear. You don't know how he speaks of you. His little treasure, as he calls you. I am almost jealous sometimes. Well, we must make him so happy. I am afraid he has had a great deal to annoy him at home, but we will do away with all that now. You must tell me what he likes and dislikes, for of course you will know. All men have their fancies and antipathies, even the wisest. I have known some gentlemen annoyed beyond measure by the merest trifles. Now, you must tell me what your dear father dislikes most, and I shall take care to avoid it. You must be my little friend and helper in pleasing him.
I think Papa isn't particular about many things. But I think our not having the dinner quite ready for him when he comes in fidgets him more than anything. You see, he has often had a long ride, and there is another long ride to come, and he has only half an hour, sometimes only a quarter, to eat his dinner in.
Thank you, my own love. Punctuality. Yes, it is a great thing in a household. It's what I've had to enforce with my young ladies at Ashcombe.
Papa doesn't care what he has if it's only ready. He would take bread and cheese if cook would only send it in instead of dinner.
Bread and cheese? Does Mr. Gibson eat cheese?
Yes, he's very fond of it. I've known him eat toasted cheese when he's been too tired to fancy anything else.
Oh, but, my dear, we must change all that. I shouldn't like to think of your father eating cheese. It's such a strong-smelling, coarse kind of thing. We must get him a cook who can toss him up an omelette or something elegant. Cheese is only fit for the kitchen.
Papa is very fond of it.
Oh, but we will cure him of that. I couldn't bear the smell of cheese, and I'm sure he would be sorry to annoy me. Cheese, indeed. But I'm afraid we must now go to Lady Cumnor. It has been very charming having you all to myself, but I know Lady Cumnor will be expecting us now, and she was very curious to see you, my future daughter, as she calls you. Come along. I'll show you the way.
Ah, there you are at last, Claire. And who is this, pray?
My dear little daughter, Lady Cumnor.
Now, Claire, don't let me have nonsense. She is not your daughter yet, and may never be. I believe that one third of the engagements I have heard of have never come to marriages. Miss Gibson, I'm very glad to see you for your father's sake. When I know you better, I hope it will be for your own. Yes. Yes, I like her looks, Claire. You may make something of her. It will be a great advantage to you, my dear, to have a lady who has trained up several young people of quality always about you, just at a time when you are growing up. I tell you what, Claire, you and she must become better acquainted. You know nothing of each other at present. You are not to be married till Christmas, and what could be better than that she should go back with you to Ashcombe? She would be with you constantly and have the advantage of the companionship of your young people, which would be a good thing for an only child. It's a capital plan. I'm very glad I thought of it.
Yes, Lady Cumnor. I don't think it would be nice at all. I mean, my lady, that I should dislike it very much. It would be taking me away from Papa just these very few last months. I will like you. I will try hard to love you, but you must not take me away from Papa just his very last bit of time that I shall have him.
My dear Molly.
On my word, young lady. Why, Claire, you've got your work before you. Not but what there's a good deal of truth in what she says. It must be very disagreeable to a girl of her age to have a stepmother coming in between her father and herself, whatever may be the advantages to her in the long run. You are 16, are you not?
No, I am 17. My birthday was 3 weeks ago.
Very much the same thing, I should think. Have you ever been to school?
No, never. Miss Eyre has taught me everything I know.
Miss Eyre was your governess, I suppose. I should not have thought your father could have afforded to keep a governess. But, of course, he must know his own affairs best.
Certainly, my lady.
You say certainly, as if it was a matter of course that everyone should know their own affairs best. You are very young, Miss Gibson, very. You'll know better before you come to my age. And I suppose you've been taught music and the use of globes and French and all the usual accomplishments. I never heard such nonsense.
Mr. Gibson, my lady.
Ah, and high time, too. Come along in, Mr. Gibson, and join your family.
My lady, Hyacinth, my dear Morley.
Oh, Papa.
Perhaps it would be as well, Claire, if you and young Miss Gibson were to take a turn or two in the gardens while I have my private interview with Mr. Gibson. Then perhaps you would all take an early dinner together.
You're most kind, Lady Cumnor.
I shall have dinner here in the quiet of my room. Tell Bates on your way out, will you, Claire?
Certainly, Lady Cumnor. Come along, Molly.
Oh, but I shall...
Off you go, young lady. You will have more than enough time for family matters at dinner. Now, Mr. Gibson, to more serious and delicate matters.
What do you think of this plan of Lady Cumnor's, my dear? She says she was advising you to have Molly as a visitor at Ashcombe until we are married.
Oh, yes. It would be a charming plan, only... Well, we know why we would rather not have it, don't we, Molly? And we won't tell Papa for fear of making him vain. No. I think I must leave her with you, dear Mr. Gibson, to have you all to herself for these last few weeks. It would be cruel to take her away.
But you know, my dear, I told you of the reason why it does not do to have Molly at home just at present.
Oh, yes. I remember now that you did.
Papa?
It really won't do just at present. I wonder if Mrs. Hamley would be happy for her to remain at Hamley Hall.
I have been sent home for a reason. What reason? And yes. Why is it kept a secret from me, but not to Mrs. Kirkpatrick, who is almost a stranger? Oh, I wish I could leave the room. But where could I go? Two is company and three is trumpery, old Betty says. Am I then always to be shut out of their confidences, to be discussed between them forever, and to be kept forever in the dark? Oh, Papa, I might as well go to Ashcombe or anywhere else now. Oh, I'm so unhappy. And yet Papa does not even notice. He is far too taken with his new plan and his new wife to even think of me.
But Mr. Gibson did notice it, and was truly sorry for his little girl. Only he thought that there was a greater chance for the future harmony of the household if he did not lead Molly to define her present feelings by putting them into words. It was his general plan to repress emotion by not showing the sympathy he felt. Molly had held up all the day bravely. She had not shown anger, or repugnance, or annoyance, or regret. But when, once more by herself in the Hamley carriage, she burst into a passion of tears and cried her fill till she reached Hamley Hall. She only hoped she could run upstairs to her own room without notice and bathe her eyes in cold water before she was seen.
I'm afraid you've had a very tiring day, Miss Gibson.
Glad to see you, Molly, my dear.
Do come in. Mother has been looking for you to come back this last hour.
That bay mare looks slightly lame to me, Jennings. I think you should take a look at her.
I have thought of you several times, Miss Gibson, for I know how awkward these new relations are.
Thank you. I did try to remember what you said and to think more of others, but it's so difficult sometimes. You do know how it is, don't you?
Yes, it is difficult, but by and by you'll be so much happier for it.
No, I shan't. It will be very dull when I shall have killed myself, as it were, and live only in trying to do and to be as other people like. I don't see any end to it. I might as well never have lived. Oh, and as for the happiness you speak of, I shall never be happy again.
Nonsense. Perhaps in 10 years' time you'll be looking back on this trial as a very light one. Who knows?
I dare say it seems foolish. Perhaps all our earthly trials will appear foolish to us after a while. Perhaps they seem so now to angels. But we are ourselves, you know. And this is now, not some time to come, a long, long way off. And we are not angels to be comforted by seeing the ends for which everything is sent.
I know. I understand. Yes, it is now we have to deal with. But might I suggest you go and see Mother, if you're not too tired. She has not been well all day, and I know she has missed you.
Oh, of course. How selfish of me not to think of it.
I'm sure she is wanting to hear all the adventures that occurred to you at the Towers.
I'll go at once.
Not leaving us already, my dear Miss Gibson.
I'm going to Mrs. Hamley.
Yes, of course. Good girl. Run along. She'll be glad to see you, I'm sure.
She is evidently still very much upset.
Yes, I feel most sorry for her. Indeed, I almost feel as if I had a share in bringing it about by mentioning the possibility of Gibson's marrying again when she first came here.
Oh, but you can hardly...
On my word, now. I wish I'd never spoken those unlucky words at dinner. I remember how she took them up. It was like a prophecy of what was to come now, wasn't it? I must take more care what I say for the future. Not but what Gibson is doing the very best thing, both for himself and her, that he can do. I told him so, the very best thing. But I'm very sorry for the little girl, though. I wish I'd never spoken about it, that I do. It was like a prophecy, wasn't it?
In the second episode of Elizabeth Gaskell's Wives and Daughters, dramatized in 9 episodes by Barry Campbell, the part of Molly Gibson was played by Catherine Hurlbut, Mr. Gibson, Tom Wilkinson, and Claire, Angela Pleasance, Squire Hamley, Robert Lang, Mrs. Hamley, Lilias Walker, Roger Hamley, Michael Troughton, Lady Cumnor, Pauline Letts, Lord Cumnor, Kerry Francis, Lady Harriet, Marion Diamond, Lady Cuxhaven, Anna Fox. Lord Hollingford, Geoffrey Collins. With Nigel Graham, Pauline Siddle and David Piat. Thelma Whiteley was Mrs. Gaskell. The music was composed by Rachel Portman, and the director was Jane Morgan.